I might be able to listen in silence to your concerns, rather than hearing everything as an accusation or an indictment against me. And I would tell you that sometimes I use sex to avoid communication. It's the best escape when we're down on our luck. But I can express more emotions than laughter.
This is the Quality News Network. A U.S. soldier was killed in a small arms attack in southeast Baghdad today, according to a U.S. military spokesman. It was a deadly weekend for U.S. forces. 12 troops died Saturday, bringing the number of U.S. military deaths to 3,560, 83 in the month of June. A string of suicide bomb attacks killed at least 40 people across Iraq today. Most were Iraqi civilians. More than 130 were wounded there. A central Baghdad hotel and four other targets were hit, including a police station and two police checkpoints. The cousin of Saddam Hussein, known as Chemical Ali, was sentenced to hang for masterminding a deadly military campaign that used poison gas against Iraqi Kurds back in the 1980s. On the eve of a Mideast peace summit in Egypt, Israeli leaders caution not to expect a breakthrough on an Israeli-Palestinian final peace deal. The Israeli cabinet voted yesterday to release hundreds of millions of dollars to the Palestinian emergency government. The move was attacked by Hamas leaders who say the money belongs to all Palestinians. North Korean officials, meantime, confirmed they received an estimated $25 million in frozen funds and, in return, they'll begin shutting down a main nuclear reactor. A watchdog team from the United Nations plans a visit to the reactor site. That'll be tomorrow. A suspected car bomb killed six peacekeepers from the United Nations on Sunday. The attack hit two UN vehicles near the southern town of Khayyam. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice says the world has failed the people of Darfur. Rice plans to attend talks in Paris concerning the troubled Sudanese region. In Manchester, England, Gordon Brown has taken over as leader of Great Britain's Labour Party. He takes over as British Prime Minister on Wednesday as Tony Blair steps down after 10 years. And a raging wildfire continues to burn out of control near the South Lake Tahoe. So far, 225 homes have burned, hundreds more structures are threatened, 1,000 people have been evacuated as hundreds of firefighters battle the flames. No injuries are reported. And we'll take a look at science and business news just ahead. Now this message.
Terry's Lounge at the Cypress Inn in downtown Carmel invites you to a great evening of your favorite foods, beverages, and live music Thursday through Saturday, featuring Dick Whittington and friends from 6 to 9:30. Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn features an appetizer-sized menu and our famous burger, salad, and fries. Afternoon tea, a great local tradition, is served from 1 to 4 p.m. daily by reservation. Sunday evenings are special as Richard Divnick entertains from 5 to 8 p.m. with classical renditions of pop, jazz, and classical music. Join the fun, food, and music at Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn, corner of Lincoln and 7th. In downtown Carmel.
A Swiss agrochemical company has struck a deal with a leading Chinese research institute to develop genetically modified drought-tolerant crops for use on global markets. Syngenta announced the five-year project will develop drought-tolerant corn, soybeans, wheat, sugar beets, and sugar cane. Scientists in Japan have come up with a new technology that could allow humans to run electronic devices using just their brain waves. The brain-machine interface was developed by Hitachi. Former White House Trade Chief Robert Zoellick appears to be certain to gain approval as the World Bank's next president. No other countries have nominated candidates, and 24-member board is meeting behind closed doors to discuss his nomination. Delphi Corporation will offer its employees buyouts of up to $140,000 in exchange for pay cuts meant to help the auto supplier emerge from bankruptcy and to avoid a possible strike. According to the Lundberg survey, the price of gas across the U.S. dipping below $3 a gallon for the first time since April. Light sweet crude oil trading at $69.14 a barrel. That's up 49 cents. And the opening numbers for Wall Street this morning, the Dow is down 185 points at 13,360. NASDAQ down 28, S&P 500 down 19.
Live from Chicago, the city with many names, it's the Cup of Joe Radio Show. 2 hours of truth and fury representing the fighting spirit of the American worker. And now, through the miracle of screaming audio, here's the guy your bosses hate, the Windy City's biggest windbag, your host, Joe Vecchio.
All right, everyone, it's time to start another week. Get the hell up, get up, get up, get out of bed, move it. 1-2, 1-2, what the hell are you still doing in bed right now? It's 11 o'clock on the East Coast, for crying out loud. Who do you think you are, me? It's time to go, another week starting up here. And we had some issues over last week concerning just getting the show going on the air. And I want to apologize to people who come in expecting a live show, and sometimes they don't get it. I do the best I can. You know, I do the best I can. It's all I can really say at this point. I'm stressed out over work. My new work schedule is just screwing me over. I don't want to say screwing me over like it was intentional, but it's just messing with my whole sleep pattern. I've never worked an 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. shift before, and everything's all screwed up. So it's tending to mess with my head and mess with my mind and, you know, all this other stuff going on. And I read the news and I keep up with the news and I just get more depressed. But how is everybody doing? I hope you're all doing pretty well. Listen, let me make a couple of announcements here. First of all, I want to announce that tomorrow we will be dark because we are doing the National Day of Silence for Internet Radio. In fact, not right this second, Bob, but after the first break, I'd like for you to come on with me for a short while and talk about that, if that's okay with you. Not right now. I've got to get a few things off my chest here. But we're going to have a National Day of Silence tomorrow, and we're going to deal with all those issues there. And I was reading the news over the weekend and about all the different things, and in particular, I was reading a really good Glenn Greenwald column, and Greenwald's become one of my favorite reads lately. And he pointed out how everybody we're fighting now in Iraq is suddenly Al-Qaeda, which is another coordinated attempt of propaganda by the Bush administration and its corporate allies. And, you know, and again, I'm not really surprised that they do that. I mean, that's what they do. They're a bunch of power-hungry SOBs, okay? And they don't really care what they say. I mean, they're BS artists. I mean, there's a difference between... Who was it that said that? There's a difference between a BS artist and a liar. And in that, a liar understands what the truth is and what it isn't, and, you know, will intentionally subvert the truth. BS artists will simply say anything because they don't care about the truth. The truth doesn't matter. The truth is irrelevant. And, you know, I don't mind them doing that to a certain extent because they're BS artists, and we know they're BS artists. We know they're liars. We know they're criminals. You know, and all the news bits just, you know, confirm it, and you wonder if the message is getting through to people who matter, but it doesn't seem to because the Bush people are still there, because Alberto Gonzalez is still Justice Department, because Mr. Bush and Mr. Cheney have not been impeached, because the Republican leadership is not only not in disarray, but they're not basically being hounded out of office at every sense, you know? I was reading Al Gore's book, The Assault on Reason, and he's absolutely right. And I've said it before, too. Bush and Cheney and Gonzalez and all these people, they're just symptoms of a greater problem. There's something wrong with this country. There's something wrong with it. And the biggest thing that's wrong with it is that we have stopped paying attention. And when we talk about, you know, well, the president's only got a 26% approval rating, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, a lot of people realize that we're on the wrong track. Yeah, but what are they doing about it? Why aren't there people out in the streets almost daily trying to change things? But again, I expect the behavior from the Bush administration because that's what they are. And I've gotten to expect that kind of behavior from the professional Washington press media. The Beltway Corps, whatever you want to call it, the punditocracy. Because these are the, you know, these are the guys who are supposed to be watching the watchmen, and instead they're in bed with these guys. You know, people talk about, well, the Democrats need to do this, Democrats need to do this. There's really not much the Democrats can do. Because every time they say something, they get accused of being phony or doing it for political reasons, and it's a no-win situation. What we have to do, first of all, we have to start ignoring these people. As I've said before, there was that old Russian saying about Pravda and Izvestia. Pravda is the Russian word for truth, and Izvestia is the Russian word for news, and that was the name. Pravda was, of course, the name of their newspaper. Izvestia was the name of their magazine, kind of like the Soviet Union's version of Life magazine, right? But there was Pravda and Izvestia. And after a while, people would say, Ne Pravda, Ne Izvestia, Izvestia ne Pravda, which means there is no news in the truth, there is no truth in the news. Okay? We can overcome this. We can overcome this. But we're not going to overcome it as long as people are solely listening to the so-called professional media, because the professional media does not have our best interest at hand. The professional media lives in a world all of its own. They don't have to go through the things that we have to go through every single day. They don't have to worry, like I do, about missing a single day of work, because missing a single day of work means the difference between paying your rent, paying your bills, and not paying them. And walking on that edge, and walking that fine line. They don't understand that, and they really don't care. And then you get people like David Broder, who seems to think that he is the voice of the people, and who other pundits of his era, of his kind, of his ilk, seem to think that David Broder is the voice of the people, when he is not the voice of the people. Not unless the people are making at least 6 to 7 figures a year. If that's what the people is, then yeah, maybe he's the voice of them. And apparently they get to decide who's a good president and who is a bad president, not based upon policy and reason, the way, you know, Al Gore talks about it in the book. Aha, okay, we're back. I'm sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. We got disconnected here. Actually, that was on my end. I was noticing that my internet light was flashing. The light that shouldn't be flashing was flashing. So I don't know what went on. It's all over my head. And not much. Listen, since we seem to have missed a break, Bob, do you want to go to break? Or let's tell you what, Bob, let's come on. Let's talk about the National Day of Silence real quick, and then we'll take our official 15-minute break and get in some ads to pay some money. How are you doing today, Bob?
I'm doing good, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Now let's talk about this because this is an important thing, and you know more of the details than I do. So tell us about the National Day of Silence here.
Well, what it boils down to is the Copyright Royalty Board, and I didn't even know there was one, is a group that arbitrarily sets rates for the use of copyrighted material, in this case, music. You know, radio stations, most everybody's heard of ASCAP or BMI. Are you familiar with that, Joe?
Slightly.
Okay. Well, like radio stations have to pay ASCAP or BMI. Bars pay ASCAP or BMI in order to play recorded music.
It's basically a royalty fee they pay to give them permission to play music.
Right. And some of the proceeds go back to the individual artists who are being paid. I have no problem with any of that. I believe that artists should be compensated far and above what they are for the most part.
Sure.
But the Copyright Royalty Board has set a royalty rate which is, frankly, designed to put internet radio out of business.
So what's the comparison? Let's give some numbers here. In the comparison, you don't have to give the exact numbers, but like how much of the royalty rate would they charge, say, for radio? Let's say they're charging a dollar for
radio.
You
can't really say a dollar. But suffice to say that with some internet radio broadcasters, the royalty rates would run as high as 1,000%.
Wow. So in other words, you know, using the dollar thing, if they were charging a dollar for radio, they'd be charging $1,000 or $100 for, $1,000 for internet radio.
Right.
Wow. I take it that's the radio stations are behind this, or is it the RIAA or who?
No,
who's
yeah, it's
this?
it's the sleazy record company lawyers. It's the RIAA. Now, interestingly, people can learn a lot about this at two places. One, savenetradio.org. Savenetradio.org.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones who are coordinating this whole thing tomorrow. And Kurt Hansen at kurthansen.com, he runs a daily newsletter called the Radio and Internet Newsletter, RAIN, and he's covered it in some depth. What it boils down to, and Kurt Hansen is the one who pointed this out in an L.A. Times exchange with one of the sleazy record industry lawyers, he pointed out that, for instance, with Napster, you remember the whole Napster thing, oh, they're stealing music.
Right, right.
Well, you'll recall what Hansen points out is in the year that Napster was at its height, the record industry was selling more records than it has ever sold before.
Yeah, it was actually a boon for the record companies.
Yeah, but you know all the filthy lawyers saw was a chance to kill something, because
right.
You know if you can you know the way it is with those kind of lawyers, if they can't screw it, they want to kill it. It's kind of like being a Republican. So they killed Napster, and their record sales went right down the toilet.
See, and it's because they charge so damn much. I mean, I've talked about this before with people. I was on a show called the Anime World Order, which was an anime-based internet radio show. Because I'm an anime fan, and I was an organizer of conventions for anime. And they were talking about the whole bootleg issue, because there's this whole big thing about, you know, bootlegging from Hong Kong and stuff like that, paying for less prices. And we were talking about the audio stuff, and I said, look, they're still charging, what, $16, $17 for a CD? That's unbelievable. I mean, you can get DVDs for $5, for crying out loud. You can get a DVD for $10, practically new.
Well, it goes.
And why are they charging so much?
Greed. These guys are buggy whip manufacturers, okay?
Sure.
And I use that analogy, and it's kind of a shorthand for me, Joe, but, you know, when Henry Ford started his assembly line and started turning out Model Ts, the buggy whip manufacturers were really angry. Because, you know, you can't use a buggy whip on a car.
Right.
Well, these guys are buggy whip manufacturers. They haven't figured out the new paradigm. They haven't figured out that users, you know, and by users, I mean, for the most part, people who are 20 years younger than me and younger than that, even my own kids, they don't care about having a physical manifestation of the music. They don't care about the disc. They don't care about vinyl. They don't care about tape, 8-track tapes, cassettes, reel-to-reel, whatever. They don't care about that because these are kids that have been raised on computers, and they want the file. Well, the recording industry hasn't figured that out yet.
Right.
Of course, it's worth remembering, Joe, that the Motion Picture Association of America, when VCRs came out, be it Sony or Beta or VHS, whatever, they screamed, "Oh my God, nobody will go to the movies anymore."
They said that with television too.
And
they're always
right, but
stuff
they
like
but
that.
But they actually jumped in and tried to stop. Let's see, one organization or another has tried to stop 8-track tapes, cassette tapes,
mm-hmm.
videotapes, compact discs, compact disc burners. We would have had CD burners in our computers years before they started appearing had it not been for the recording industry organization. Oh, you know, they'll put us out of business.
But remarkably enough, we got DVD burners fairly quickly. I mean, they were on the market very soon, and in fact, that's because
the legal fight had been had over the CDs. So, you know, I don't think they could litigate it again. But anyway, what it boils down to is this Copyright Royalty Board is trying to, under the guise of trying to see that artists are compensated, they're trying to put internet radio out of business. And that doesn't so much apply to the horn because we don't use a lot of copyrighted music.
Right.
You know, we'll use 20 seconds worth on a bumper,
question.
And that's fair use.
Right. Well, let me ask the obvious question. Are the artists actually getting their fair due anyway? Would they be getting their fair due? When were they getting their fair due from the RIAA?
Well, see, that's the problem. If you start asking the RIAA about their internal business, they kind of shut down. That's not for you little people to know. That's between us and the artists. What business is it of yours?
See, and we get not just, you know, with the anime people and with other people talking about the bootleg stuff and about, you know, don't download songs and stuff like that. We get the concern trolls, you know, as they're called.
Right.
People who tend to sit there and say, oh, this is such a big deal. Why, you know, why are you pro-bootlegging? I said, I don't know. Why are you pro-price gouging? You know, because that's basically what it is. I mean, you can't just say that they can charge whatever price they want, and you can just say, well I'm just
look at the
buy it.
Yeah, look at the structure as the Copyright Royalty Board has put it out there. If I understand it correctly, I could be wrong. If let's say that I sit here and I play a tune, whatever tune, but it's a copyrighted tune. If I play that over the stream, that's not one performance. The way the Copyright Royalty Board wants to put it down, every single person who hears that is a performance.
And why don't they include that for radio? Because, you know, you have a lot more listeners for radio, I'm sure, depending on the station, of course.
Right. But, you see, you can't get the metrics on radio. All you can do is get a ballpark estimate through folks like, you know, Nielsen or Arbitron, that kind of thing. But, you know, you can look at somebody's server and tell how many people are hitting it. And they want to charge by the person.
I don't see how they can stop it anyway. I mean, even, you know, look, here's the deal. I go on IRC chat quite a bit. I talk in the Bart Cop chat room.
Yeah.
I'll go in politics rooms and stuff like that. And there are people who have little radio stations, and they have little channels that are set up just for the radio stations where people make requests, and they run a stream over the server.
Right.
You know, and that's that. You know, no big deal. I did a thing over this weekend, something I'd never done before. I did, there's somebody who did a live video stream of the Doctor Who television series, and I watched it as it aired on BBC One in Great Britain. That was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon for me. It was like 8 o'clock in Britain, right?
Yeah.
So the technology is there, and people are going to make use of it, okay? And the question is if you try to stomp on it, it's just going to squeeze out from underneath because it's like putty, you know? It's like trying to smash gravy with a hammer. You really can't do it. It's going to come out eventually.
Well, it is, and iTunes
really kind of pointless, isn't it?
iTunes, for instance, according to a QNN report from late last week, has moved into, I think, the number three purveyor of music in the world.
Wow.
How
long has that been around? 5 years?
Yeah, in one form or another, maybe a little bit longer than that. But again, it's a representation of the fact that, you know, the technology has moved on. You know, I remember, it was great art. There was a, you remember when, you remember albums, of course.
And definitely.
And the ones that really came out with the huge releases, you know, it would fold out and there'd be all this art and design work. One of the leading album design firms was Hipgnosis, Hipgnosis. They did Dark Side of the Moon. They did all of the Alan Parsons covers. Brilliant art. Guess what? People don't care anymore.
Yeah.
And that's a shame, because that was a manifestation of what the album was in many ways. But a lot of this is a case of video killed the radio star.
And somebody made an interesting point too. Is that the MP3s and the iTunes and all that may kill albums? Because for the most part, if you listen to a lot of these albums, there's really only in a lot of cases there are only one or two really good songs on it that are worth listening to. There are rare exceptions to that, of course. There are some albums that are just unbelievably, every song is just a masterpiece. But that's very rare. And it's going to be less incentive for someone to go out and try to put together an entire album when people are only really interested in listening to a single song. See what I'm saying?
Sure I do. And, of course, that's always been there's always been an element of that in the whole album construct paradigm. The music industry in the excesses of, say, the mid-70s, really brought a lot of this on themselves, because you'd go out and, I remember being a kid in the late 70s, early 80s, you go out, you spend $12 on a vinyl record, okay? And it's got 33 minutes of music on it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going, wait a minute, there's another album over there that's got 47 minutes of music on it, and it's the same $12.99. And it's a case of abusing a captive market. So here you've got an opportunity for people to pick and choose. You know, they can put together their own albums. It doesn't.
Oh, sure.
And the recording industry wants to kill it. And what they're after with internet radio, all of that goes to the Napster issues and stuff. But what they're doing with internet radio, they don't want people even hearing it. If it's not being played on terrestrial radio, or you're not buying it at the record store, you don't get to hear it. Or you didn't buy a ticket to a concert, you don't get to hear it. Now,
right.
And the funny thing for me, Joe, is that this industry, is one of those that pioneered the phrase, there is no such thing as bad publicity. And frankly, whether it's Radio I.O. or Yahoo Radio or Pandora, any of the Live365.com, all these that are going dark tomorrow, the recording industry ought to be paying them. It's free publicity.
Mm-hmm. But like you said, the sales showed. When Napster was going full swing, the sales were through the roof. And it's because a lot of people do have that kind of sense of more, I really like this song, I should go out and buy the CD.
I want to support the artist.
Sure. But then you get the point where they say, I want to support the artist, but here's a CD that sells for $18. I'm only making $6.50 an hour. I can't afford $18. The internet connection's already in the house, so guess what?
Yeah, I can go to iTunes and buy it for 99 cents. The song,
sure,
I want, not the album.
And, there were guys at Siemens and at other places that I've worked where they had a little list of songs and videos that they had, and someone said, hey, listen, I want this. Can you make up this album? And the guy, yeah, sure, $5. And the guy would burn the CD and sell. If they were charging $5 in the stores, there wouldn't be a problem, right?
Right.
But even so, like you said, but people nowadays, they don't even want the CDs anymore. Why should you get the CDs?
What I'll do
is I'll go to the library, and I'll take a CD out of the library, and I'll just make copies onto my computer. you know, or I'll borrow a DVD from the library and just burn a copy for myself.
Well, you'll have one of the RIAA Nazis on your doorstep tomorrow, Joe, after
They're like that. But, you know, it's from the library. And I'm not selling them. I'm just, you know, it's for my own use. And it's a library thing. So, you know, are they going to shut down the libraries, too? No more DVDs in
the library. Well, if they had their way,
no
Joe...
No more CDs in the library.
Joe, if they had their way, they would.
Oh, sure. They wanted to close down used CD stores. I remember that. You can't sell a CD back to a used store, you know, because that's music. That's intellectual property.
But the radio issue in particular is the weirdest part of the lot. First of all, most of these people are not doing it for profit.
Right.
Okay. I mean, we're talking about imposing these 1,000% royalty rates on an NPR stream, for the love of God, or on the Horn, or on there's millions of these little operations.
Well, like I said, you know, you go in these little IRC chat rooms and people just have their own little music stations going on. And it's just music they like, and the people in the channel suggest them. These are guys with, you know, a home computer, you know, and a little and a setup from Winamp or whatever to stream the music. And that's it. What does it cost them? $5-$10, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, apart from the cost of the equipment or not.
Well, consider I don't know if we should really get into the money aspect of it or into the cost aspect of it. If I want to, let's say I've got a demo reel of Horn audio that I want to, you know, leave for radio stations all around the world, whatever. I can duplicate that onto CD for something probably less than 25 cents a disc.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's me buying blank discs retail. Consider what it is to print a million of them wholesale. It's probably less than a penny a disc. And you turn around and you charge $17 for it.
And the money's not going to the artists.
No.
It's like the thing in the news about the GM asking people to have buyouts and take, you know, pay cuts and stuff like that. Are the executives taking pay cuts?
No. No, no, they're not.
So who's the country for? That's what I keep asking. Who is the country for, Bob? Is it for you and me?
Right.
Or is it for some guy who made all of his money inheriting it from his daddy and therefore used it to start a big business and use his power and authority to try to knock everybody else out of business? Is that who the country's
well,
for?
Well, that's why we're doing this tomorrow, because this isn't just a music issue. This is a democracy issue. This is a free speech issue. There is art in, well, back in the days of being a DJ, when stuff was still on vinyl, the great art of a really good DJ laid in the segue. I think one of the best segues I ever heard was out of, because it was just mind-boggling. It was so seamless, so perfect. It was, there was a ticking clock at the end of Sting's... One of Sting's songs, and the guy segued it into Time by Pink Floyd.
Mm.
The art of the segue, putting the song together, is the art of the jock. You know,
and that was when DJs had more control over stuff. DJs have no control over.
No. Radio's dead. Okay, that's why internet radio has come along. Now you can't. It's harder to segue digital music. But there's more freedom in it. Now, once upon a time, there was a radio format called AOR, Joe. Maybe you remember it. Album-oriented rock. Casey in St. Louis was one of the great practitioners.
They'd play whole albums?
Oh, they'd play whole albums, or they'd play cuts off of albums that had not been released as singles. You know, it was really, really, really listener-driven. And it was fabulous for people who loved the music.
Well, you know, Bob, you and I have talked about this TV show from time to time privately, but one of my favorite TV shows, WKRP in Cincinnati. And that took place in the 70s, of course.
Yes.
And I was remembering the sequence where the station manager, Andy, was begging the DJ, Dr. Johnny Fever, to play a top 40 song. And Johnny Fever's like, I'm not touching that stuff, you know. And he's playing Pink Floyd, and he's playing, you know, all these... what we call now classic rock. But you can't imagine that today. DJ has absolutely no control over what goes on.
Well, that's because there are no DJs, Joe.
Between.
Joe, there are no DJs.
Yeah. I mean, it's all pre-recorded stuff.
Well, when I was over at WWNR in Beckley, I got to voice track once in a while. And that's what DJing is now. It's voice tracking. You go in the production room, you turn on the computer, and you lay down a series of 20-second tracks over the course of about 20 minutes, and you've done a 5-hour shift. And the thing runs, and you're off doing whatever you're doing, but you're, you know, you're there. That's right. The extent of jocking now.
And, you know, there was a station, what was it, 92.9 in Atlanta. I actually called them up once, and I said, because, you know, they have the, and the playlists are so limited because it's so marketed to individual songs and stuff like that. And, you know, the thing I asked them was, the thing I told them, I said, you know, whatever, Mara, that was her name, I think, the DJ, I said, you know, I happen to know that the Beatles made more than 3 songs. You know, I happen to know this for a fact. So, and then you get the popular radio where I worked, I had the radio issues, and where I worked, they had, they play the top 40 rap, where they play the same 6 songs over and over again, every single hour.
Well,
and I can't imagine how people listen to it.
And see, this has all been created by, and I had a great conversation this past Friday night on my show. This is the shameless plug part of your program, Joe, with a guy named Mark.
Are we still on?
Yeah,
are you there?
I'm right here. Are you there?
Well, listen, if you can hear me,
yeah,
let's
just
go ahead and take our bottom of the hour break. We'll have the Wins News.
All right. Sounds good. We're going to do it. Enjoyed it, Joe. We'll be dark all day tomorrow. That's how we finish this all out. We'll be dark all day tomorrow in support of Internet Radio Broadcasters. This is the Head On Radio Network, and we will be, as they say, right back.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, the problem with the so-called professional media has just as much to do with the news they're not telling you than it does with what they do tell you. If, for example, you were to believe what you see on TV or read in the newspapers, you would think that everything is just fine in New Orleans or along the Mississippi Gulf Coast. That's why unreportednews.net is so important. It's not just keeping us informed of the tragedy that's still unfolding on the Gulf Coast, it's helping to do something about it by helping families who have had their lives and livelihoods destroyed. Not just by a terrible natural disaster, but by the callous indifference of the current administration and their wealthy allies in the news media. UnreportedNews.net is taking the initiative to keep us focused on this tragedy, but they can't do it alone. They need your help. So please go to UnreportedNews.net and give what you can, and let others know what's happening there. Because the only thing worse than an unnecessary death is an unmourned one. UnreportedNews.net, your source for real news.
It wasn't exactly planes, trains, and automobiles on Head On with Bob Kincaid.
This is what the Bush Administration Justice Department didn't want you to see back in 2001. They took out and they huffed the marker a little bit, and then they went, oh, cool. And they wiped out the name where it says, the plane was chartered either by the Saudi Arabian royalty family or Osama bin Laden. Somebody's got to call up and say, good afternoon. Thank you for calling Ryan International Flights. How may I help you?
Hello. This is Osama bin Laden, and I would like to rent a Boeing 727. Do you have one handy?
Oh, just a moment. Let me check. It's a Mr. bin Laden wants to know if we got a 727. Do we, Harry, do we have a 727?
Yeah, we got a 727 just sitting there on the lot. Going cheap.
There's nothing here. Nothing to look at. Keep moving. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. The 6'7" Arab with the portable dialysis machine and the white robes.
Somebody's trying.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, weeknight, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Head On Radio Network.
Here's a little test for you. Identify the following water-saving devices around your home. Using water wisely is important, since our growing population puts pressure on this limited resource. Ready? That's water-saving device number 19, your outdoor faucet. Check faucets, sprinklers, and hoses for drips or leaks to save water and money. That's your toothbrush, water-saving device number 54. Turn the faucet off while you brush and save up to 25 gallons a month. It's water-saving device number 11, your water bill. If it's unusually high, you could have a leak. Learn to detect and repair leaks by contacting your water provider. Last clue? That's BeWaterSmart.net, a helpful website full of water-saving tips from the Water Conservation Coalition and your local water provider. there are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
Okay, and I'm back, and I'm sorry for the minor interruption there. We were, my ISP is connecting and resetting and doing all that goofy stuff, and I apologize for that, but I'm glad we're on a good way. We're just going to keep going here, Bob. We'll go through to the end of the show. Thanks for being on the show, by the way, and talking to us about the National Day of Silence tomorrow for Internet Radio. And, you know, this is an important thing. You know, and like Bob said, Head On isn't really affected by it directly because we're not a music station and we don't deal with, you know, those issues. However, it is a free speech thing. And it's about corporate control of speech. Just as we have corporate control of our lives. They've been working towards this stuff for 30 years. A lot of people seem to think that that it happened overnight, and it really didn't. It really didn't. But listen, if you want to get in and talk about this issue or other issues, you can give us a call. We got about 15 minutes, 20 minutes left, I guess. Plenty of time to have a nice little conversation. Number to call in is 1-304-658-5453 or toll-free number 1-877-4-HEAD-ON, 1-877-443-2366. But the 304 number is 304-658-5453. And, of course, you can always go to the Head On Radio Network chat room, which is absolutely free for anybody with an Internet connection that doesn't keep reconnecting. and that is, you can go to headonradionetwork.com and click on the Head On chat room link, on the chat room link, and that will take you right there, and you get to talk to some of the smartest people on the Internets. And who we've got there? We've got Benedict, we've got our good friend Bob Kincaid, I'm there, ELO's there, Lemon, Suzanne, and Trouble. We got Trouble. Trouble right here at Head On City, ladies and gentlemen. Right there in the chat room. You know, but technology changes everything, as Bob and I were talking about. Let me talk about this for a little while, because it really does affect our democracy in a way our democracy works. Al Gore is discussing this in his book, The Assault on Reason, and he was talking about how the power of communication, the power of propaganda through one-way communication is changed our democracy. And he discusses how back when print first came out, when Gutenberg invented the printing press and started printing out the first books, there was a hunger for knowledge. There was a thirst for knowledge. Because until then, you know, very few people could read. And the church in particular and the governments in general had control over all knowledge. And only the elite few could afford to have an education. But the print industry changed all that and brought about the Enlightenment and brought about the Age of Reason. And you look at the Founding Fathers, after we defeated the British in the Revolutionary War, and by the way, we defeated the British in the same way that the Iraqis are defeating us, not because we won a lot of major military conflicts with the British, which we did not, but because we hung around so long it just simply become too expensive for the British to continue an overseas campaign, which is what's going on in Iraq. But I digress from that. When the country was founded, when they were talking about putting together a constitution, because let me bring back a little history here, if I could, without trying to bore everybody. We had a confederation of states, basically, that worked up to a point, but a lot of the people who, you know, we know to be the founding fathers realized that, you know, it wasn't going to work, and something needed to be done. And they knew they were going to have a lot of trouble convincing their individual states of that. So what they decided to do is, let's get together in Philadelphia next summer, 1780, and we'll talk about it. And it wasn't planned on having a constitution. The people of Virginia, I think it was, they had something in line, and they went with that as kind of a foundation, and it just kind of went on from there. But the important thing was, everything was done by debate, argument, reason. Yes, there was compromise. There were some harsh words, but as I've said before, Alexander Hamilton was not sitting out there with an army outside the building. Ben Franklin didn't have his army. George Washington didn't have his army. It wasn't done through force of arms. It was done by reason. And the basic foundation of our constitutional government is that we do things by reason. That's why we have checks and balances to prevent one person from getting power. But the problem now is that the founding fathers certainly could not anticipate the type of technology that we have now, and television in particular, which is pretty much a one-way communications device. If you want to get on television, it takes a lot of money, or you have to engender yourself to people who have the money to get you on the radio on the television stations. Okay, you and I can't have a television transmitter. I can't do this radio station on a regular broadcast radio show unless I go to apply for a job as a DJ or as a radio talk show host at a traditional radio station. And that's a different world. That's a different way of doing things. Okay? Whereas here on the Head On Radio Network, I can sit here in my underwear in my living room or in my bedroom and do a broadcast. Not that I'm doing that right now, but you get the point. It's the internet is a very inexpensive method, but I'll get into that in a second. But the point is, it's all one-way communication. There's very little communicating back and forth, and therefore there can be very little reasonable argument. And when television first came out, and throughout the 50s and the 60s and the early 70s, you had people in government who understood the proper role of television, in particular television news, and who didn't abuse that authority as far as propaganda is concerned. I mean, I remember the line that that LBJ said about Walter Cronkite. When Walter Cronkite finally turned on the Vietnam War, he said, "Well, we've lost Cronkite, we've lost the nation." And people trusted, you know, guys like Cronkite. They trusted Edward R. Murrow because they were legitimate journalists doing a legitimate job trying to report the truth. Sometimes they were a little too establishment, perhaps, but when the facts invariably showed up for what they weren't afraid to speak their mind. The Republicans, of course, hated that because the Republicans hate the truth. The truth to the Republicans is that we've got all the money and power and you suck. That's the truth to the Republicans. But the internet is still in the embryonic stages, and it's hopeful that if it's not quashed before it can begin, it can become what the printing press was. It could become the medium for communication and reason and hopefully bring us out of this. But I don't know. I'm pretty skeptical. We'll have to see what happens. Let's go to the phones. We've got Susan from Oregon, also known as Trouble. We got Trouble right here at Head On Network. Hi, Susan. How are you?
Hanging in there.
you got something to counter my gloom and doom?
Not really, but I thought I'd bring up a point. You know, you mentioned it briefly about our Revolutionary War. Basically, besides the fact that we just held on, was also the fact that we did exactly what the Iraqis are doing also, in that we turned guerrilla. I suggest anybody who doubts that look up the name Francis Marion, otherwise known as the Swamp Fox. What really, really gets me mad is these things that are circulating on the internet, you know, these letters from irate housewives and stuff like that, and one of them are quoted. It says, "I'll care when the cowardly so-called insurgents in Iraq come out and fight like men instead of disrespecting their own religion and hiding in mosques." I finally got mad, and I took this entire letter apart, point by point, and replied to it. And posted it on a mailing list.
Well, you know, Susan, the thing about it is they're really not irate housewives. They're paid operatives.
Oh hell no, they're creepers.
Right, and some of them are paid operatives for the Republican Party. They do stuff like this.
Oh yeah,
manufacturing of dissent in that sense.
Yeah, but if they are not answered, people start to believe them. And so I said, well, hey, wait a minute. Now, it's time to do your patriotic duty and stand up. So I proceeded to answer this whole thing. And I'm seriously considering posting it on the website because it shows what the creepers are trying to push.
Oh, well, they've been pushing this stuff for ages. I mean, it goes above and beyond. I mean, it goes back to the 60s. You know, and the 50s and the 40s and all the lies that they've been spreading simply because all they're interested in is I got what I want to get and anybody gets in my way, screw them.
Yeah,
and it starts you know, the truth doesn't matter to them.
And it starts off, of course, right away with the big lie.
Mm-hmm.
Iraq caused 9/11.
Yeah.
Great.
I mean, look, I'm an idiot, okay? I only graduated from high school, okay? I'm not particularly well educated. I didn't go to college. I know nothing, and I saw this right away.
Neither did I, but I read a lot. And the first thing I spotted was, this is phonier than, pardon my language, well, you know what I was going to say.
Sure. Well, actually, you know, the first words out of my mouth were Reichstag. That was the first word out of my mouth.
When
I saw 9/11.
Yeah, when they started talking about this whole thing, I said, can anybody spell Gulf of Tonkin?
Yeah.
Same thing.
And we fell for it again. And you know, the difference between, you know, Watergate and Vietnam and now is that during Watergate, at least, we had the press on our side. They were willing to go out there and uncover the truth. Now they're all in bed with them. And you listen to guys like David Broder talk, it's as if, you know, this whole thing is just, you know, that the Bush is doing is just bad politics and we shouldn't be punishing people for bad politics. That's ridiculous. They've crossed the line.
Bad politics, my eye, they need to be taken out and tried as war criminals, the whole bunch of them.
The whole thing. The entire Bush administration, both past and present, the Republican leadership, and all their financial backers. Let's go after the Scapes and the Murdochs. And all these people. And let's put Rush Limbaugh on trial. Let's put Sean Hannity on trial. Because, you know, they're all part of it. What was the guy's name who wrote that newspaper in Germany, Der Sturm? I keep forgetting his name. He was tried and he was executed. And he was, you know, he was a member of the Nazi Party, but he wasn't like a government official. He was a propagandist.
Yeah.
And they tried him and they hung him as well.
I can remember the most telling thing that came out of Nuremberg and was when they were told that when these German officers were told, we're putting you on trial for war crimes, they said, looked down their nose and said, what, for making war? And they were told, no, for starting it.
For starting it, exactly. And that's what these guys did. They look, you know, as I've said before, I'm no pacifist, okay? If we're attacked and I really seriously believe that we're in danger, man, even though I'm 45 years old and I'm so out of shape, I'm going to donate to my body to science fiction, I'm there. I'm going to try to sign up. I'm going to try to do my part. Because because I believe in defending your country when necessary.
Exactly.
But that's the only reason to go to war, as far as I'm concerned. Self-defense.
Exactly.
Absolutely self-defense. And this is not a case like that.
Turning around and stomping all over Iraq is not self-defense. The ironic thing is, this Cheney especially is, apparently he's the real president. He's pushing to go into Iran.
Yeah.
If the United States, I'll make a prediction here on air, if the United States goes into Iran, we're going to pull back a bloody stump.
Oh, yeah, of course. Because Iran has what, about 9 times the population of Iraq? It's much larger in area. And the rest,
army,
you know, if
that is blooded, and they're not afraid to use human wave attacks if needed.
And you know, we don't have the troops for it anyway. I mean, that may be the only thing that stops it. We simply don't have the troops for it. And God knows if they call for a draft, that'll be the end of the Republican Party.
I think the Republican Party is already done. By the time the Bushes get done with this, the Republican Party will be so tainted and so toxic that even calling yourself a Republican is equivalent to calling yourself a war criminal.
Well, it's either going to go one or two ways there, Susan. It's either going to be that it's going to be like that or even far worse for the Republican Party, or it's going to be where they're so totally in control because they've just had a totally straightforward illegal coup that, you know, just saying you're not a Republican might even get you shot. You see what I'm saying? So I think it's either going to go one way or the other.
If it comes to that, then the self-defense clause kicks in as far as I'm concerned.
Right. Well, you know, I'm ready. I got my bat here in case something like that happens.
Well,
you know.
I'm two hours away from a border, so if necessary, I can run. But I probably wouldn't.
Well, I'm here in Chicago, and we're not too far from Canada from up here. Just a short trip over the lake.
I keep telling people, buy guns. Many, many guns. Keep them stockpiled. You may need them.
But what if, you know, here's another scenario here, Susan. What if they use tactical nukes against Iran? Just don't bother with them. I mean, you know, if you think everybody hates us now, what do they think of us if we start nuking Iran?
Nuking Iran would probably start off World War III and all of the mad scenarios, because Russia still has all of those nukes.
And China has nukes?
A lot of them, yeah, and China has nukes. And if we go to the point where we're going to be willing to use a nuke, this country is dead. We can expect to get them in return, and we'll deserve it.
And it's a shame to say it, but you're right. You know, we would deserve it. And basically, a lot of it, and not a lot of it, but a good part of it is our fault, because we allowed it to happen. This is still our government, and our government is a reflection of who we are and what we are. Even if we've been propagandized against, there's got to be a certain point where we simply say enough is enough. And that point really came in 2004, as far as I'm concerned.
I've been fighting this government since before Bush went into office. But unfortunately, most of the American people thought George Bush was wonderful.
And yeah, well, propaganda.
When the mushroom clouds start blooming, guys, you got yourselves to blame. That's all I got to say to you. You got yourselves to blame because you thought this guy was wonderful.
Yeah. And then, you know, we can thank the members of the press for not calling Bush on every single lie, for concentrating on Al Gore's size, and for, you know, just repeating Republican mantra all through the recount in Florida. I mean, if the press had pushed, and if we had pushed back a little bit, then Al Gore would have been in the White House. But of course, they would have tried to take him down anyway. Just like they almost took down President Clinton. Listen,
okay.
Susan, I hate to do this to you because I love to have a conversation, but we really need to wrap up.
Yeah.
The show is almost over here.
It's been nice talking to you.
Thank you very much, Susan. Susan, A.K.A. Trouble, and she certainly is trouble for the Bush administration in terms of getting the message out about what they're doing. All right, the Cup of Joe radio show has been a production of the Head On Radio Network. Bob Kincaid running the board out there in the studios in West Virginia. Cup of Joe radio show has been sponsored by UnreportedNews.net. UnreportedNews.net, your source for real news. And if you want to listen to the archives of the show, if you want to listen to today's show at a later date, you can go to White Rose Society, whiterosesociety.org. Our good friend Ben Birch hosting the archives of not just myself, but all of the Head On Radio Network shows. America Back on Track is next. Tomorrow we're doing the silence bit to save Internet radio. Until Wednesday then, this is Joe Vecchio saying, hey, hey, get back to work.
I want a cup of Joe. I crave a plate of Dave. Open a jar of Joe. Don't put anything on. I'll chug a jug of George. I'll sip a mug of Doug with the creamer of Steve. How many more does that leave? Give me a pot of Scott. Heat up a pan of Stan. Throw in a handful of Dick. That'll do. Retreat to the carafe of Matt. Upon a tray of Ray. I'll lick a spoon of Sean. Do I need to go? I want a cup of Joe. Yeah. I'll lick a spoon of Sean. Do I need to go on? I want a cup of Joe.
You're listening to The Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. A string of suicide bomb attacks killed at least 46 people across Iraq today. Most were Iraqi civilians. A central Baghdad hotel and four other targets were hit. The cousin of Saddam Hussein, known as Chemical Ali, was sentenced to hang for masterminding a deadly military campaign that used poison gas against Iraqi Kurds back in the 1980s. Tens of thousands of people were killed. A U.S. soldier was killed in a small arms attack in southeast Baghdad today. It was a deadly weekend for U.S. forces. 12 troops died on Saturday. On the eve of the Red Sea Summit, a Mideast peace summit in Egypt, Israeli leaders cautioned not to expect a breakthrough on an Israeli-Palestinian final peace deal. The Israeli cabinet voted yesterday to release hundreds of millions of dollars to the Palestinian emergency government. The move was attacked by Hamas leaders. The deputy leader of Al-Qaeda is calling on Muslims around the world to back Hamas with weapons and money. Ayman al-Zawahiri said an offensive is being prepared, quote, in which the Egyptians and Saudis will join, end quote. Known by the U.S. military as Al-Qaeda's main strategist, al-Zawahiri has a $25 million bounty on his head. Abducted BBC reporter Alan Johnston appeared on videotape released today by the Army of Islam. Johnston was strapped into a harness loaded with explosives and made a nervous plea to Hamas militants and the British government not to use military means to free him, saying his captors will detonate the vest if used. In Lebanon, a car bomb killed six peacekeepers from the United Nations on Sunday. A raging forest fire continues to burn out of control near South Lake Tahoe. So far, 225 homes have been destroyed, hundreds more threatened, 1,000 people